Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz _ radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome to it, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. A loaded show, a lot to talk about. You're invited. As always, here can tap the line, Shillingbridge, Cork, and Tap House, 466-3776, 466-3776, toll-free, 800-825-5865, on Twitter, at Hail Varsity, at Schmidt _ radio, and the Pride of Chicago, Danny Burke, will get you on the air if you want to chime in. Listen, there's just a ton floating around today to get into. College football playoff. Bucky Radley-Hiles opening his recruitment. Greg Smith of Hail Varsity going to be with us in a little more than an hour. Get his take on the situation, the rest of Nebraska's class, and Greg's reaction to it. That's on my mind. Also, Bill Moose has done a lot of interviews around the state with the newspaper, with radio stations, with us last week. And he talked about Scott Frost with Nick Baugh yesterday. So thoughts on that. And I'm being very candid with that. And, you know, it's kind of, you have Frost over here, you have the season in the middle, and then you have the early signing period off to the right, and that's kind of your trifecta today to get into. And listen, this is a very unapologetic take and probably a little bit too crass. But if you don't want potential coaching candidates talked about or floated out there, the coaching carousel being attached to your program, and if you don't want top 50 recruits opening their recruitment, despite, I don't know how many times Buki's been here. We had him on last summer. Great dude, good kid, real talent. When you look at the talent level he's competing with, and against every weekend at IMG, not only for a starting spot there, but their kind of national travel schedule, and they're playing Centennial and some of the who's who of high school football programs, top 50 recruit. Don't lose to Northern Illinois. Don't be 4-4. Don't be underdog to Purdue. Don't. Okay? That's just the hard and fast truth of the problems that exist because of what's been done and not been done on the field from a performance standpoint. That's really your issue. You want to keep guys like Buki and other studs in this class that have offers from Clemson and from Alabama and from Ohio State and from Penn State. I mean, it's a minor miracle based on the on-field performance that Nebraska is even being considered by some of these kids. Now, to Riley and his staff's credit, they've busted their butt to get these kids here multiple times on unofficials and then have shown them the red carpet on official visits. It's been the relationship development by Dante Williams, by Keith Williams, specifically for the wideouts and defensive back spots. It's been Mike Riley and his wife. I mean, they're just good folks, but they're not winning enough right now. So there's question, there's speculation, there's concern. And if you're a high-profile recruit, you listened to Nebraska about Nebraska because of the Keyshawn Johnson senior relationship. He was in charge of the 7-on-7s that all these kids played for out of the Calabasas, Calabraska region. And that's how you at least got the door open, because of Key senior. Well, junior isn't here anymore. Nebraska's 4-4. No shot at winning the West unless Wisconsin absolutely capsizes. And Nebraska wins out, by the way. And if you're Bucky Radley-Hiles, you're at such a high level of competition, your own fire burns to compete at a high level because you left Calabasas to go to IMG because you wanted to kind of start your tutelage and be a high-level player, playing against the best, practicing against the best. You're going to look at Whether or not you love Mike Riley or not, you're going to look at Oklahoma and Clemson. They've been to two of the last three college football playoffs. One of them is a defending national champion. One of them just won by 14 or 17 at Ohio State. You're kind of wired that way to be the best. That's what you want to do. At least that's his personality makeup right now. Okay? So these programs that have been the best for the last 5 or 10 years are going to swoop in and say, do you want to win or do you want to go play for Riley and maybe win? Because that's the question. It's maybe if he's here, if they get time, if they turn it around. That's what's in doubt, the ability to turn it around. And when it comes to Bill Moos and Mike Riley and the future of the football program, you know, you have four legs here to stand on from like the old Nebraska bar stool, okay? Let's talk about this vision that Mike Riley has, that Bill Moos needs to see, believe, and say, yeah, I want to buy some stock in this. Here's some more time. Well, part of the you look at four stools. We're going to go with a four-stool bar stool here instead of three, okay? Some of us are a little heavy up top, so we need a little more stability on the base. It's going to be on-field performance. It's going to be recruiting momentum. It's going to be kind of how do you look? Are you coaching the kids? Are they playing like they're practicing? Okay, I've just nailed three of them. And ultimately, that fourth stool is going to be, okay, if you are winning, who are you beating? And let's just talk about this. Who's Nebraska beaten this year? Beaten some, you know, Purdue's a three-win Purdue team, but hey, that's kind of like unique for them. So we won't scoff at it. It's a win on the road. Who else have you beaten? Yeah, you beat Illinois on the road. You beat Arkansas State. You only lost by 7, but it looked like you could have lost by 407 to Oregon. Point is against the halves where you need to compete and win or be in the ballgame to have a chance to win, that's been absent in year three. From a recruiting momentum, that's been the main focal point here of growth and promise and the salesmanship of hope. Look, here's my roster. Here's my injury situation. Here's our offense. Here's our defensive scheme. It's all constant transition. Give me a little more time to get through this growing pain session with some of the cavalry coming in, like the Bookies of the world, and it'll be okay. Year four, year five, year six. Just let it pop. Let it marinate in the oven for a bit. But that's taken a monster hit because the keystone of your recruiting class just checked out. And you can't blame him, and you shouldn't blame him for doing it. He's the most sincere recruit I've talked to. I've talked to all of them. Hail Varsity's talked to all of them. Part of our job, inform you. You as fans want to hear from him and kind of get to know him a bit. And that is what it's become. It's not what's happening now. It's what's on the horizon. Just wait till next year almost. Well, that has shifted, and it's come to an abrupt halt because of how this season's gone. And your main pitch here to your new AD in on-field performance isn't how these guys have been coached up. Because, I mean, they're not playing great ball this point in the year. Injuries are not. There's still fundamental mistakes. And they're not perfect, I get it, but I'm just pointing out what you can point to as the coach to your AD. And who have we beat? I don't know. I'll let you decide who the most impressive win is this season. But it doesn't raise the hair on the back of your neck in a positive way. It's somebody you should beat and drill. You've already lost to a non-Power 5. That got things rocking and rolling in the ugly fashion early in the year. So this is really tough. This is a byproduct of your on-field performance. And you're getting held accountable now by these recruits, because I don't know if it's more so the fact that Riley may not be here, why Buki's checking out, or if it's the fact that, you know, I mean, Oklahoma and Clemson are pretty damn good. I want to play the best. I want to be at the best. And, yeah, I wanted to build a program at Nebraska, but that program's doesn't look like that vision will get built here, or there's question about that. And if I had to lean, it's probably Riley's future that made him open his recruitment process. But dude wants to play for a winner. And Nebraska's not winning at a high level right now. And it doesn't look like they're any closer at doing that right now. Still a lot of season left. Can still kind of kick it into gear. Can use this Purdue win as a spark. Can make a move and see what you do against Northwestern. There's a lot in front of you. And it's not, the door isn't shut. It's wide open, in fact, but it was shut and it was painted red in Nebraska's favor. That's my thought here on Buki Radley-Hiles. And if you're Mike Riley, this process of selling to your new boss, I mean, what can you point to right now other than on-field performance, the product that's out there, and how you finish out the season? Now, there's still plenty of really good, talented kids in this recruiting class. Do they stick and stay? Do you keep them interested? Do you put some wins together? Do you make things a bit easier on yourself when it comes to job speculation? Because Bill Moose said yesterday he's, you know, still evaluating. It's too soon. He's still evaluating. That's good news, but the bad news of that is his praise and how familiar he is with Scott Frost. It's like he's done his homework already on Frosty. Well, wow. The only question I had about him was, how would he be as a head coach? Doing a hell of a job. You know? I mean, just a tough day for Mike Riley and this staff yesterday with Buki Radley-Hiles decommitting. Do not fault number 44. Tremendous kid, great talent, impressive specimen. And the thing with him, when you lose him as kind of the guy that the rest of the peers would follow and want to play with and go to Nebraska with, not only do you get that guy who connects everything, now he's looking around, but what do you need on this team? You need guys on this team that are really good and talented, can participate and contribute, and then build themselves up to be all conference. I mean, that's what you're looking for if you want to start beating the Ohio States and Wisconsins of the world. And I'm sorry, beating the Iowas of the world, beat the Northwesterns of the world. We need to get guys that are as good or better than them. And Buki's one of those guys that can play anywhere and be a guy that's good enough to be, Ohio State says, yeah, you're good enough to play for us. Penn State says, yeah, you're good enough to play for us. Alabama says, you're good enough to play for us. Clemson, come on down. You're losing out on that type of talent. But from a leadership standpoint, and God, I'm projecting here, I know, on an 18-year-old, but just the way he's carried himself and the conversations I've had with him and we've had with him at Hail Varsity, he's just a different dude. One of those kind of leaders that kind of pulls guys together and is going to be one of your best players, but also one of your best workers, and also demands from teammates. When we talk culture, and that's been a buzzword all season, the culture discussion has been, you know, very, very prominent. Where's Nebraska's culture? What's it like? Well, he's one of those guys that kind of reshapes and resets a culture. You would think anyway. He's one of those guys that comes in and says, this is how you do things. This is how you win. This is how I did it growing up at successful programs. Go. You lose that. And you lose that ability to infect positively the rest of the next class. So major loss with Buki Radley-Hiles. Good luck and Godspeed to him wherever he ends up. And if you want to keep things of this level and this nature from hemorrhaging, this promise of hope is in your recruiting class. You need to start winning on the field and take care of your business on the field where you're not 4-4 midway through, people wondering about your job. It's in your control as a program, as a coach, and as a group of players. And I think they are trying. It hasn't gone their way. But that's how you eliminate job speculation and decommitments. It's within your control to a degree. Guys got to go execute. But are they in position to execute Monday through Thursday, getting developed, getting used to game speed so when Saturday happens, it's not sputtering on both sides of the ball? Part of that, too, is with transition and system. That's a fact of life, but it was still a decision made. So plenty to get to today on a Wednesday on Bookie Radley Hiles. What's your reaction as a Nebraska fan? I hope you support him, and we'll see if Nebraska can still make a charge this year. We'll spend some time talking Bill Moose's thoughts on Scott Frost. Can join us 466-377-6800-825-5865. Dave Ennett is coming up, play-by-play man in Northwestern. Brad Edwards next hour. Greg Smith, Hail Varsity recruiting guru at Greg Smith HV next hour. Take more of your thoughts on Twitter, and can give us a shout, 466-377-6800-825-5865. Your chance at Northwestern and Nebraska tickets later on in the hour.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Let's talk Northwestern Wildcats, play-by-play man, WGN Sports Director, and a longtime play-by-play man for Northwestern, Dave Ennett, is with us. Dave, great to speak with you again. How are you?
I'm doing great, Chris. Good to be with you.
Well, should be another nail-biter, white-knuckler, throw out another cliche. It's going to be one of those at Memorial Stadium, right? I mean, that's kind of tradition between Nebraska and Northwestern in Lincoln, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, it's, in my mind, it's kind of an underrated rivalry in the Big Ten. I mean, I realize Nebraska's got other rivals, and Iowa the day after Thanksgiving has been a big rival since Nebraska came in. But, yeah, I think if you look at just how competitive this series has been, and you're right. I mean, the games in Lincoln have been, you know, two wins for Northwestern and a win for Nebraska on a Hail Mary that I think people probably are still talking about in Lincoln and probably will be for a long time. So I think it's been a great series so far, and I would expect another nail-biter on Saturday. You're right.
Why do you think that is? To me, Northwestern, man, just comes in, and they've out-toughed Nebraska in a lot of the wins, and they've always been good with the turnover margin. It seems like you get a defensive score in the wins in Lincoln. Does Coach Fitz, does he circle Nebraska at all, or does he just do a great job at this point in the year? Because it's usually November or late October. I know last year was end of September, but for the most part, they're midpoint or later games. It seems like he has his kids ready and really ready for Nebraska.
He does. I think it's possible that the first meeting in Lincoln when Northwestern won, and at the time, I think the Cornhuskers were the ranked team. I don't think Northwestern was at that particular time.
The last time Nebraska was in the top 10.
Yeah, and I just think maybe that was one of those cases where they caught him by surprise a little bit, and it's sort of the definition of an upset where maybe Nebraska, I don't remember how Nebraska's schedule set up at the time. Were they possibly looking ahead? Did they take Northwestern lightly? I don't think this is necessarily a game that fits circles on the schedule any more than any other. I think he really appreciates the rivalry. I think he really enjoys it. I think the one that they've tended to schedule, I think a couple of them, one is Iowa, and they've had some pretty good results in that series since Fitz has been the head coach and even going back to his playing days. And I think Illinois, obviously, is an in-state rival, and Wisconsin's kind of become a pretty good rivalry for them because geographically that's probably the closest Big Ten campus to Evanston. But this one, I think, for whatever reason, it has been a really hard-fought. I mean, even the game in Evanston when I think Taylor Martinez led him back in the last few minutes in 2012, and that was one of only three games that Northwestern lost that year. So and it's not just the games in Lincoln. Even last year, I think it was until Nebraska was able to pull away late in that night game, I think the Northwestern was hanging in there with them.
David Ent with us here on Hale Varsity Radio, play-by-play man for Northwestern, WGN Radio. They've been close. What did you think coming into this season with Northwestern? Did you see this team kind of building up to peak? Were you nervous after Penn State?
Well, I think there was good reason to be concerned about what lay ahead for them, because I think if you go back, Chris, to the preseason, I think Northwestern was the trendy pick. If it weren't Wisconsin winning the Big Ten West, and maybe there was some support for Nebraska here and there, for Iowa here and there, I think Northwestern was a pretty trendy pick to finish second and to give the Badgers their biggest run for the division. And so I think the way they started out, losing in Madison, that's how they started the Big Ten schedule. And if you remember, they had the lead at halftime in that game at Camp Randall, and then I think Wisconsin scored three straight touchdowns. Northwestern rallied late, but gave up a safety in the final minute. So, you know, I think they were disappointed, but then they knew they were coming home to play Penn State, and in that game, they were only down 10-0 at halftime, but their offense was really struggling, and they just never got anything going until that game was out of reach. So I think there was a legitimate cause to be concerned going into their road game at Maryland, and that's where they turned it around. And ever since then, offensively, they've been a much better team. And I think the defense has played pretty well throughout. But yeah, I mean, I think there was legitimate concern about, if you looked at the schedule, how this team was going to end up.
What's your thoughts on Thorson? And you've seen him since his freshman year to where he's at now, and his grasp of the offense, his playmaking ability. What's coming into Lincoln? How good is this the best football he's played?
Well, I think certainly last week, I think you have to take that performance and say this was one of his best games. And I certainly thought it was his best game this year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, part of it, Chris, is that he's thrown the ball to a lot of different guys. And some guys who haven't played all that much. Last year, he had this receiver named Austin Carr, who nobody in the Big Ten had heard of. And in fact, a lot of Northwestern fans didn't really know about him until last year. And he becomes the Big Ten receiver of the year and leads the conference in touchdown receptions and receiving yards. Had an unbelievable year. Well, there hasn't been that one guy this year. It's been different guys, and I think maybe there's been a little bit of an adjustment, and I think sometimes perhaps Thorson has maybe tried to make a few plays, and as a result there have been some turnovers there. And I think that over the last few weeks, especially with this winning streak, I think Thorson's play has gone hand in hand with the success that Northwestern's had. And I think, look, there's never been any question about his grasp of the offense. Mm-hmm. I think from day one, he started first game of his redshirt freshman year, and he has started every game since then. And the guy has always been a great student of the game. I think if you talk to the offensive coaches, that's been something they've really appreciated about him. His accuracy has generally been pretty good, and it was really good last week. Yeah, his numbers were good. He had a few balls dropped on him, too, against Michigan State, so maybe they could have been even a little better. But I think the thing people have to keep in mind, Clay was under a lot of pressure last year, was sacked a lot, and through the early part of this season, it was kind of the same story. He was sacked 8 times at Wisconsin. Now, I know that's not all on the offensive line. Is some of it's on the quarterback when that happens, but at the same time, he was under an awful lot of pressure. The offensive line's played a lot better the last few games, and I think as a result, we've seen more of the Clayton Thorson we expected to see.
Well, and that's a question I have, is from a balance perspective, Nebraska's really kind of hit the wall trying to run the football. It seems like Northwestern's better now at being balanced, and Jackson's an incredible back. I mean, he's phenomenal, but it seems like the line's getting better. Are they gelling, or are they getting healthy? What's the reason?
I think that's exactly it. It's both. I think they're gelling. I think the offensive line has sort of stabilized. And Justin Jackson was dealing with some injuries through the early part of the season. And now he's healthy. Now, you know, it's funny. You play Wisconsin, and healthy or not, and he wasn't healthy for that game, but Wisconsin shuts a lot of people down. So does Penn State on the ground. Michigan State's got as good a rushing defense as there is in the conference. So he hasn't maybe put up the huge numbers in those games that people have been used to seeing from Justin Jackson. Yet, he makes the play in overtime against Iowa on a third down pass from Clayton Thorson that sets up the game-winning touchdown. And likewise, last week, he makes some big plays at key moments on third downs. So even when he isn't ripping off huge chunks of yardage, he's doing the things that you look to a senior captain and your all-time rushing leader to get accomplished. And the guy's just been a pleasure to watch play, to be around. He's one of those guys you root for. He's tremendous, and when he's healthy, he's a huge threat. And you know, if a team isn't ready to really play some good, strong run defense, then he's going to eat you up. And I'm sure Nebraska is thinking about that going into this game.
Dave, as we say goodbye, your thoughts on Nebraska? They're 4-4 now. They got a last-second win against Purdue. What's the feel you have for Nebraska coming in from afar?
Well, you know what, Chris? I was really stunned. The first chance I really had to watch them was the Northern Illinois game. And I was really surprised by that. But then I watched him against
you're
Purdue.
Not alone.
Yeah, well, I'm sure. But I watched him against Purdue, and they looked a lot better. I know they're dealing with some injuries, but it seemed like, you know, that drive by Lee at the end of the game was as good as anything I've seen around the conference this year, except maybe those drives in overtime by Northwestern. It's always a tough place. I know that some teams have gone in there, and it's generally a tough place for visiting teams, but I also think you have to consider the opposition that went in and had success so far. I think Northwestern's a good team, and I think Nebraska knows that. I think that the way Northwestern's playing now, this is a big chance for them. And, you know, I think that the one thing I'm sure Northwestern is relieved not to see Jordan Westerkamp lining up on offense for Nebraska anymore, and some other guys who've kind of had their number over the years. But I think that I think it's going to be a great game. I think Nebraska knows how important it is for them, and I think the Wildcats know that, you know, they have a chance with four games to go to add to their win total and make it a really special kind of a year. So I'm looking for another great one, and I have no doubt it's going to go down to the last play of the game.
Dave, I've got to ask you real quick about the Northwestern rush defense. What makes that part of the unit special?
Well, I think the one guy that Nebraska fans are going to want to keep an eye on Saturday is number 42, Patty Fisher, their middle linebacker. He's a redshirt freshman. He replaced one of the best players in the Big Ten, and Anthony Walker, who's now playing for the Indianapolis Colts. And this guy is getting better every week. He had 17 tackles against Michigan State. That was the official stats. Pat Fitzgerald says he actually had 21 by the coaches' count. He was the National Defensive Player of the Week. He's the Big Ten Defensive Player of the Week. 14 solo tackles against Michigan State. And I think, you know, they have a good defensive line. I think the front seven overall is playing very well. But you'd be hard-pressed to find a linebacker around the Big Ten playing better right now than Patty Fisher.
Dave Ennett, WGN play-by-play man, Northwestern. Dave, we'll see you on Saturday. Thanks for a few minutes today.
We'll look forward to it. Thank you, Chris.
Miss us? Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Brad Edwards coming up, Greg Smith on Bookie. In about a little less than an hour, it is time for the Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Mike Shuhart Shuey is in. Husker Golf, Wilderness Ridge. Can log on today, wildernessridgegolf.com, and find out about some of their membership pricing, membership benefits. It will warm up. I know it's November, but you're going to sneak in some 60-degree days. I can't guarantee it, but I declare it because it happens every November.
Always.
Always. And they have great fall rates, and they're a bargain. They aren't paying you to golf, but they should be, because it feels like it when it comes to what you're spending on the championship course, what you're spending on the Talon course. It's just phenomenal. And go see Director of Golf Chris Thompson. Go see Director of Instruction Shuey, Mike Shuhart. Shuey, you guys got some heated stuff working too, if you need to work on that swing, if it is 30 and bad out.
Yeah, we got a
year-round hookup.
We got it year-round, so it's like you can come out and work on your game all the time.
Do it. And Shuey will help you do that. I've got great news for you. If you can find a brunch date, Sundays at Wilderness Ridge, grab your gals, take your family, get a brunch date going with that honey of yours, and join Wilderness Ridge every Sunday for brunch featuring interactive stations, beverage bars. I'm doing the old choo-choo right now. Mm-hmm. And the traditional breakfast and lunch items. And this weekend only, say it with me, chili and cinnamon rolls by the fire, offered a la carte with the lunch menu. Noon on Sunday at Wilderness Ridge. Also, give them a ring. That call I had for the Thanksgiving Day brunch. Also, they'll have another bourbon tasting coming up. So 434-5118. Log on wildernessridgegolf.com. Find out more. But cinnamon rolls and chili this Sunday at Wilderness Ridge. And I think what's cool is finding the old brunch date.
How about that?
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
That'd be great.
You got a lot of stuff going on.
I have my date before she like reaches through the phone on me here.
And that brunch is to die for.
It is,
man.
So good.
It is so good.
I'm so bad at this, but I'll take Junior when I know she's, my wife's a nurse, when I know she's working, so I'm not having to.
You got to figure it out.
I do. I take me and the boy. It's a little dad Junior time.
That's right.
Okay, talk to me here, Shuey. Let's get into Tiger Woods. And I want your thoughts here as Tigers made that announcement, the Hero Championship in December. It's already November, my friend. Give me a reaction here. Give me kind of ballpark it for me with what you're expecting to see and how you think this will work out for Tiger. I mean, I've seen the social media. I've seen the video. I mean, he looks awesome swinging, but we've been teased before.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's awesome that he's back. You know, Tiger is Tiger. I mean, he is such an icon in the game, and he's so important to the game. You know, everybody knows who Tiger Woods. I mean, when you have a name Tiger, that's it, and everybody knows who you're talking about, I mean, that just tells you how big of an icon you are. You know, so it's really exciting that he's coming back. You know, expectations, you know, man, it's hard to think and fathom that he would be competitive in the event. He hadn't played golf for basically a year, because last year was the last he played in this event last year, and then went,
didn't he get tweak himself?
Yeah, and then he played one round the next event that he played in, and then he basically was done, and then he went in for another back surgery. So it's like you haven't played golf for a year, and you're going to go play against some of the best players, the best players in the world that have been playing all year, that are on somewhat at the top of their game. So it's like, you know, being realistic, I mean, he
probably wants to just go out there. And this isn't moral victory guy here, but he probably just wants to go out there and get through a round and feel good doing it.
Yeah.
Are those the goals?
I think so. I mean, they have to be. I mean, obviously, with knowing Tiger a little bit, as competitive of a man as he is and player, I mean, obviously he's going to go out there and thinking he can win the tournament, which he should, but it's like being realistic. It's like, you know, will he finish last? Probably. Mm-hmm. He might be one or two
guys. Will that beat him up?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. I mean, some of it is just seeing what he can do. I mean, where am I at? What can I do? You know, I just find it hard to believe that all of a sudden he's coming back and thinking that he's gonna start contending in majors. I think he would like to, but how does he know? I mean, he hadn't played golf in a year, and he's coming off another back surgery. So I think a lot of this is testing the waters and seeing, and it's his tournament. I mean, he basically put this together. Mm-hmm. So him playing in the tournament is obviously very important. But I think a lot of it is just getting back playing, seeing where he's at, you know, having fun doing it a little bit. Kind
at
of the
this
key.
Point, being away from it for so long and always having a setback when he's been trying to return, he's probably recalibrated his approach, which might be good for him because he was always so locked in and so fanatical about it. You got to be great. I get that. But now he can maybe have some fun and see this challenge in a similar sense, like trying to take Jack down. But now it's let's crawl back and get back to being competitive. Is his personality one to be able to kind of go with the flow on that? That's my question here. No, right?
No way. No, not that intense of a competitor and what it is you're out there to do.
But he's been humbled through injury.
He has, so I'm sure. That'll be a lot of the things, you know, and finding a different way to be super successful. I mean, that's the beauty of it, which is unlike other sports, man. Mm-hmm. You lose a step in football, you're pretty much done. You mm-hmm. know, you lose a few miles an hour in your fastball in baseball, you're pretty much done.
Unless you're a dirty lefty.
That's right. You know, golf is unique because there's a lot of ways to make birdies, you know? You don't have to be the longest. It makes it more difficult, especially mm-hmm. with the way the game is played now. It's a very powerful game. Guys out there are massively powerful in how they play with finesse. So it's like, wow, you got Dustin Johnsons that are hitting at 320, and then they're one of the best wedge players out there, you know, and they make putts. And so it's like, but that doesn't mean you can't find another way to be able to do what it is that it takes to win the golf tournament. So maybe he's finding another way to be successful at what it is he's trying to get done. So it'll be really fun. I mean, it'll be intriguing.
Shuey, I want to start this conversation. It'll carry us over to next segment. But when it comes to recruiting players for golf, and I know you can't get specific, but just in general, we've got a minute here, so I'll set it up on the other side. We'll attack this. But when it comes to evaluation and not only talent level, but personality with a recruit, and then that relationship building that happens with a recruit that ultimately gets them to say, I want to go play for Nebraska. I want to play in the Big Ten. I want to go play for this coach or this program. I mean, the differentiation between university and coach. Want to get into that. Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf, Husker Golf with us. Cinnamon rolls and chili.
Yummy.
This Sunday for the Wilderness Ridge brunch. Give them a shout. Get your reservation, 402-434-5106. We'll talk more golf with Mike Shewhart. Shuey, Wilderness Ridge Golf continues. Your chance, Northwestern, Nebraska, and Blur Party Passes coming up before we say goodbye.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Wilderness Ridge Golf segment continues. Mike Shewhart, Shuey is with us. Shuey, recruiting. Tell me about that relationship development that goes on with a prospective player. And it's different for different kids, I get. But some are wowed by the university. Some are wowed by the coach. Some are wowed by the program. It's kind of the merry-go-round, isn't it?
Pretty much, you know, and it's the whole.
You got to identify what is most impressive to the prospective player.
Well, the first thing is at least our job is to make our team better.
Right.
So to even be recruited and looking at it, we're trying to add a player that makes our squad better. You know, so it's like, and. So once you identify that player, you build a relationship with them, and then you use everything that's out there, mm-hmm. you know, to help entice that player. You know, some players know who you are, some players don't, so some you have to educate. You know, and it's like they come in on an unofficial visit or an official visit, you know, and they see the university. So it's a pretty cool place. I mean, just it in itself, the athletic department. Then you take them through what the athletic department does and what it's all about, which is then really eye-opening. What it does for the student athlete, it's a pretty impressive place, you know. So you're talking about academics, you're talking about athletics, you know, golf probably a little different than some of the other sports, but not totally. I mean, it's still kind of the same, but, you know, academics are super important, you know, and what it is, no different than all the other sports, and the athletic side of it is, and it's their, what are they going to do, you know, what's, you know, their opportunity to play, their opportunity to get better, and they look, they know. They look at where players are, where they came from, and the development that takes place. So there's like, yeah, they develop players. They get better. They were better in their junior year than they were their freshman year,
sure.
type of things. So there's a lot of things that I think the player themselves, parents, they look at a little bit and kind mm-hmm. of see, you know. So, and then it's just a fit, you know. Do they fit? I mean, do they fit what it is you're trying to get done? Obviously, can they help you become a better team? You know, do they fit
within? Do they fit the room?
Do they fit? I mean, are they a problem or are they not? You know, will they fit in and do, you know? It's like you can take one great player, but if it makes the other four not very good, I mean, it's like, is that worth taking that player?
Sure.
So there's a lot of balancing that you have to kind of evaluate and see, you know. But most of them, they get along really well. I mean, they love to play the game, mm-hmm. you know. They love being a college student athlete. They love the things that go along with it, you know. Most of them do. They all mm-hmm. do. So it's like, it's pretty impressive to them, you know. And it's an honor in a lot of cases. In most cases, it's an honor to be somebody that's chosen to have the opportunity to come play for a D1, you know, major sport.
Yeah.
So my bottom line is like you're always trying to get a player that will make you better. Mm. You know, that means right away. Sometimes you need right away. Sometimes you see the potential of that player and you can see, man, if we give them a lot of opportunity through being around a lot of other good players, being able to work with people that can train them, you know, and develop them. It's like the opportunity for them to be a good player. I mean, then they will help your team, no question. You know, so.
Good stuff. Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Husker Golf. Shuey, hang out. Brad Edwards is coming up. College football playoff thoughts. Get Brad's reaction to Bill Moose's comments on Scott Frost. And the Big Ten. Where are they at in this playoff run? There's plenty of time to decide it yet. Brad Edwards next.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Hour 2, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. College football playoff reveal yesterday, week 1. Mr. College Football Insider, college football and game day host, and ESPN.com. He does everything, and this is a busy time of year, season for him. Brad Edwards is with us to get things kicked off. Greg Smith on the way to talk recruiting from Hail Varsity. Brad, pretty wild night last night when it comes to who ended up number one. We'll get your thoughts on that. We'll talk a little Nebraska as well. How are you doing this week?
Oh, I'm doing great. Did not get to participate in any of the Halloween festivities. It was all wrapped up in the rankings, and then about an hour after it was over, I just shut it down and watched my Dodgers stay alive. So that's kind of the agenda for tonight as well.
Well, good for you. I like it. Here's what I did. I kind of handed my child off to a Bronco fan, and they went trick-or-treating, and I watched the Dodgers as well. I'm a father of the year.
Hey, great job, Chris. I'm not sure I'm proud of you, but you did what you had to do.
No, you're proud of me. You just don't want to say it. I like it. Well, let's talk committee here. And what's your thoughts here on Georgia getting the top spot? Look, there's a lot of football to be played. That said, are you do you agree with Georgia being in that top spot?
I do. I thought that it was a pretty obvious decision. I was kind of surprised to hear Kirby Hokut say that there was a very intense conversation over it. With 1 and 2 with Georgia and Alabama. I mean, I get that most people who are watching these games believe that Alabama's the best team, and certainly the way that they play would indicate that they probably are. The reason I thought this was easy, though, is this was not a simple case of just, the resume of Georgia versus the eye test of Alabama, because Georgia passes the eye test as well. And, take away that one-point win they have over Notre Dame, which is obviously their signature win. Everyone else, they've pounded, and they're beating teams by Alabama-like scores. And for that reason, I thought it should have been an easy decision, which is that the two teams are basically the same, except for one of them has a road win over a top-10 team, top-5, as it turned out for the committee, and the other one does not have a significant win in the top 20, and so I think they made the right choice.
Brad Edwards with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Brad, your thought on Notre Dame coming in where they're located, and if you were to give me a percentage on the Irish winning out, what would that be?
I would give them a pretty good chance to win out, because I feel like NC State was better than anyone they have left on their schedule. Okay, understanding, the combined probability and all that, mm-hmm. which most people kind of fail to grasp. I think our FPI gives them around a 35% chance to win out.
Okay.
I would say about 50-50, because I think FPI is giving both Miami and Stanford a little bit too much credit. I think it likes them a little bit more than it should, and so I think that the path for Notre Dame is maybe a little bit easier than some people are saying. So I think they have a great schedule in that they are playing good teams but not great teams. So the types of teams that a top 4 or 5 caliber team should beat, but not the types of teams that that are going to do anything but help their resume. And so that's what I love about their schedule in terms of impressing the committee, but at the same time, I don't think it's high risk in terms of, what some of the other teams have left compared to, what Oklahoma has this weekend at Oklahoma State. I think that's a far more difficult game than anything that Notre Dame has left.
Yeah, you look at Oklahoma, and they come in front of Ohio State. Clemson is in that 4 spot. Right now, you agree with Georgia and Bama being 1-2. And then you have Notre Dame in there because they have probably the best loss, but they've got the best string of wins, as do Clemson with their wins early on in the year. They won at Auburn. They've beaten Louisville. They've handled Florida State. And I know Florida State's not great now, but I still count them as a win that you'd be proud of despite their struggles. Are you more impressed with what Clemson's done, or do you have a hard time forgetting about their loss to Syracuse?
I don't have a hard time. I don't know if forgetting about it's the right word, but I don't have a hard time putting it aside. It was playing on Friday night's kind of a weird deal anyway.
Yeah, it is.
And then their quarterback was not 100% coming in, and then he had to leave the game with a concussion in the second quarter. And while you could say, they weren't playing great before he got hurt, I recognize that he wasn't at 100% at any point in that game, and then they play the whole second half without him. So I don't think that that's the normal Clemson team that lost that game, and this is kind of what the committee's for, situations like this. Now, I don't know if the committee's ever going to excuse 2 losses, but certainly if you have 1 and they're extenuating circumstances, they'll take that into consideration, and I personally thought going into last night they would have Clemson 3 and Notre Dame 4.
Okay.
I don't have a problem with them doing it the other way, but except for the 3-4 flip, they ranked 1 through 10 exactly the way I thought they would.
When you look at the Big Ten, is it enough for Ohio State to win out and getting in or jumping into this top four? Is it going to need to have an unbeaten Wisconsin waiting for them in the Big Ten championship, assuming Notre Dame stays with the one loss, assuming Oklahoma gets tagged and has a second loss? Can they get into that top four spot? Is it going to be a tough road to travel, or do you think it'll be something that you might see after Thanksgiving? Do you think Ohio State can make their way into the playoff?
I think Ohio State's simplest path is to win out and either Notre Dame, Clemson, or Oklahoma loses one more game.
Okay.
I think that's pretty clear cut that they get in that scenario. Where it becomes more interesting is if they don't get what they need outside of the conference. And, you know, the SEC has an undefeated champion, and then those three teams that are I just mentioned that are sitting at 3, mm-hmm. 4, and 5 right now all went out. Let's
Did we lose him? Brad?
We put them over.
Brad, we got you. Hello, Brad. Try him again. There's a dirty spot in Connecticut as he's driving home that he hits twice a football season. I forget the name of the town. We will get a name of the town and send them a request to have cell service figured out for Wednesdays at 5:15. Brad Edwards momentarily with us on Hail Varsity Radio. So he says Ohio State's simplest path is to have Notre Dame, Clemson, or Oklahoma get tagged. Will Clemson lose again? Don't know. They have Miami looming. Will Notre Dame lose again? Don't know. They have Notre Dame v. Miami coming up. And Notre Dame has Stanford. Those are two coin flips, theoretically. Does Oklahoma lose again? I think the Sooners have the best chance to lose again because they're at Stillwater this weekend for Bedlam. Then they've got TCU, and then they got to rematch somebody in the Big Ten championship game. Danny is working hard. I mean, he put his old style down, and he got Brad Edwards back on the horn. Brad, we hit that rough spot, bud. How are you?
Yeah, that actually was not the normal rough spot. I mean, I'm not.
There's another.
I guess there is another one. I wasn't expecting that. But anyway, so what I was saying about Ohio State is that, you know, I think where it would get interesting is if all those teams, you know, basically ranked ahead of them were to win out, except the SEC teams, which would have to play each other eventually. What would the committee do? Because I don't think that they would put Ohio State ahead of Oklahoma, given the head-to-head, if mm-hmm. both are 12-1 conference champs. And even though last year is not supposed to matter, I think it would be very difficult for the people in that committee to put in a 12-1 Ohio State over a 12-1 Clemson, given that Clemson is number one, the defending national champ, and number two, they beat Ohio State 31-0 in last year's playoff.
Right.
So I think it brings us to Notre Dame, and here's where I think it's possible for Ohio State to get in without one of those teams losing, is that Notre Dame's schedule may or may not cooperate down the stretch. And if Penn State wins out and Wisconsin wins out to the Big Ten championship game, Ohio State will have more than likely two top 10 wins when it's all said and done. I'm not sure that Notre Dame will have any. In fact, at this point, I would doubt that Notre Dame will have any. And so that's really, I think, what it comes down to is of the wins that Notre Dame would have, there are a lot of good ones. I mean, a lot of teams ranked between, say, 15 and 50 are going to be victims of Notre Dame. But will they have enough top 25 wins to offset the fact that they don't have any top 10? And so I think the ideal situation for Notre Dame, and obviously what Ohio State would not want to see, would be for the two Pac-12 teams Notre Dame plays, USC and Stanford, to end up playing each other for the conference title. The two ACC teams they play, NC State and Miami, to play each other for the conference title. If a scenario like that played out, and we already believe Georgia's going to, at the very least, going to be in the SEC championship game, if they played five teams that made it to Power 5 conference championship games, I cannot see how Notre Dame could get left out sitting there with only one loss at the end. And so I don't think it's a slam dunk for Ohio State. I don't think it's a slam dunk for Wisconsin, even though they're undefeated. But the scenario that would be required in order to keep them out probably has about a 1% chance of happening.
Brad Edwards with us, Hail Varsity Radio, ESPN Insider, College Game Day. And we're talking college football playoff. Brad, I want to switch gears. Got about 4 minutes here. And in your opinion, who is Florida's top candidate? Who's the best fit out there for their job?
I was thinking about you, was that Monday? Tuesday. I think it was Tuesday as I was riding into work. I don't know if you ever had either Bruce Feldman or Stuart Mandel on your show before.
It's been a while, but I've had them on both quite a few times about 5, 6, 7 years ago.
All right, well, they have a podcast together. It's called The Audible, and they had Andy Staples from Sports Illustrated on as their guest, and they were discussing the Florida situation. These guys are pretty dialed in, mm-hmm. And they, if you listen to that conversation, this is this week's podcast. It was posted on Monday. At the end of the conversation, you will not believe there's much of a chance that Scott Frost is going to get that job.
Okay.
And so that might make Nebraska fans feel better. After they talked it through, and I'm not I don't know for a fact that he would jump at it because he's only in his first year at his current school, but the guy they seem to believe, and it made a lot of sense, their logic, would be the best guy for the job is Willie Taggart at Oregon, for those mm-hmm. who don't remember. Yeah. I know you played them earlier this year. So that, I think that's an interesting scenario. They did mention Dan Mullen as a possibility. Someone I know close to Mississippi State does not believe that Mullen would go to Florida. They do believe he might leave Mississippi State, but they don't think that Florida would be the job that he would take. So I don't know. I think it's still wide open, but listening to them will make you feel less likely that that Scott Frost would be Florida's first choice.
From a national perspective, and you look at the Nebraska job, what's your take on the drawback? And I've got about 2 minutes here, less than 2 minutes. What's the drawback for Frost coming back to Lincoln if the job opens?
Well, I guess the drawback is the question that, you know, that we all kind of ask nationally, and you probably ask it locally too, which is that, what's it going to take for Nebraska to be able to contend for national titles again? You know, it'd be one thing for him to win the Big Ten West and, you know, in a one-game shot be able to, you know, to win the conference title. But could they actually do that with a good enough resume to get into the playoff if that happened? And if they got in the playoff, would they be good enough to have any prayer of winning it? And
right.
So that's the question. Is you know, can anybody be able to recruit well enough at Nebraska today to get them back to that spot? And I think that's the big question he would have to ask. If he has a choice between Nebraska and another Power 5 job, if the other one is one that he's more sure that he could compete for national titles, I'm guessing you know him. I've never met him, but he sure seems like the kind of guy to me who's competitive enough that he'd want to win at the highest level if he's going to go to a Power 5 school. And I think that's the question is, can you still do that at Nebraska, or would you want to see someone else come in, get the job, and get them a step closer to where it seems like more of a reality than maybe it does right now?
He's pretty pragmatic about what he takes and where he goes, and his patience level is well documented for Central Florida. Bill Moose also spoke pretty glowingly about Frost yesterday, and we had Moose on last week, and from a timing standpoint, he'd been on the job 4 days, and you were heading into a pretty imperative game at Purdue. I did not ask him about Scott Frost, but he had a comment on it. Brad, we will catch up next week, and more mayhem this weekend in college football, perhaps. Thanks for a few minutes today.
You never know. All right, I'll talk to you next week.
How about take care? Brad Edwards, College Football Insider, ESPN College Game Day. And part of the college football playoff committee and research with that. Greg Smith, a Hail Varsity, to talk recruiting next.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Well, you're going to want to get caught up with Brad Edwards if you missed that. The podcast is HailVarsity.com, iTunes, or the ESPN Lincoln app. Recruiting guru for HailVarsity.com and magazine at Greg Smith HV on Twitter. Greg Smith with us to talk Buki in this 2018 class. Mr. Greg, sir, how are you?
I'm excellent, man. How are you?
Good. You've been all over it the last 24 hours with Buki opening up his commitment. You spoke with him. I've had a chance to talk with him in the past several months, and special players, special personality. And are you surprised it took this long for him to open up his commitment, knowing what the temperature and which way the wind's been blowing on Mike Riley and his staff?
Yeah, I'm still a little surprised. I'm not surprised that it took this long, actually. I have to take that back. Because I thought that he would actually wait a little bit longer to see, you know, just how things went. You know, there are people still holding out hope that Nebraska could finish off that season 4-1, you know, with that one obviously being the Penn State game that everybody's nervous about, and justifiably so. And I thought maybe, you know, he would still take his visits and then be able to kind of assess things after the Iowa game, similar to Bill Moose. But he decided to not do that and go ahead and pull the trigger now and be out of the class and be done with it. It's an unfortunate situation, but it also is a byproduct of, you know, when you fire your athletic director and send your entire season into chaos early, these are the types of consequences that come with that.
The other side of that is there is control for this staff as well, correct? When it comes to on-field performance, when it comes to what they can do to keep a class together, but also to keep guys who are highly sought after interested in Nebraska. My question to you is, if you were to give me a percentage on relationship and you know, playing for Dante or Keith or Riley, what percentage of that from an important standpoint is it for Buki and some of these other kids versus playing for a winner, playing for a team that's in the top four of the college football playoff, or a defending national champion, or a team that's been to two of the three college football playoffs? What weighs heavier, the relationship or the on-field product and ability to win?
You know, it's interesting because at the very end there, I think you hit on what my technical answer was going to be, and that's the ability to win combined with the relationships. Listen, the relationships, I think, is honestly the bigger piece for a lot of these guys, which flies counter to what you're feeling right now and based on kind of the other programs that, say, Buki is looking at after he decommitted. But think about it this way. Nebraska does not have to have been undefeated at this point to keep him in the class or to keep Josh more from looking around or to keep guys, you know, teams from sniffing around Chase Williams. They didn't have to go undefeated. They had to build those relationships, and then they had to be competitive. It feels like we keep coming back to that word of competitive, mm-hmm. and guys want to know that they'll have an opportunity to then come in and play for championships. Not necessarily that the team is playing for them right this minute, but they have to be close enough to where when I, as Buki Radley Hiles, or as I, as Micah Parsons, or I, as Tommy Bush, jump into the class and I get onto campus, we're all going to put this thing over the top. You can't necessarily say that with a straight face and honestly right now, that even landing those guys gets them guys that much closer to being a championship football team, because the gap is just that big right now.
It is. And these guys have played at major programs or are at major programs. And I look at Buki, and with talking with him this summer, I mean, the guy chose to leave a really good program in Calabasas and go to IMG to play against the best and practice against the best. These guys with that type of wiring want to win above all, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's a little bit of, you know, kind of getting into the weeds and the details of it. But yes, it is winning, but it's also the ability to be able to take your team to the next level. And when you're this far away from it, and not to mention the stability factor became a big deal as well in this particular case with Buki. And you have to think about it this way, is that, you know, he got to know a certain group of people and administrators and coaches here at Nebraska. So it's not just that he got to know the coaching staff, but those administrators. So when he comes out on his official visit, it's great that, you know, the different guys, Hank Bounds, are hosting people at their house and all of that. But he's looking around and also and saying, I don't know that guy. I haven't built a relationship with him, as great as this is. I haven't built a relationship with the interim AD, Dave Remington. Like, what is going on here? Not to mention, you have a whole bunch of other recruits probably asking the same question at the same time. And then, oh, by the way, they a handful of them all go to Oklahoma together. And don't think that it didn't come up about the instability that's going on in the Nebraska football program right now.
Well, let's talk Pledger for a second. That's where he's been committed. And they were there together on an official, Buki and Pledger. And you saw an exciting win over Tech. OU finishes in front of Ohio State in the latest CFP. But how much is Pledger whistling in his ear with look at Boomer Sooner? I know Clemson's for sure a factor because of how good they are and its vicinity to IMG. And he took an official there probably 3 weeks ago. Correct me if I'm wrong. But now it's instead of Buki talking to the masses, he's got his roommate and buddy Pledger telling him to look at Boomer Sooner, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And he did not. He took an unofficial to Clemson earlier in the season. He'll take his official there, or scheduled to take his official there in a couple weeks. We'll be curious to see if that visit happens after how well it seemingly went in Norman over the weekend. But yeah, you're absolutely right. T.J. Pledger, it turned out that this entire time that, you know, Nebraska fans have been pining for T.J. Pledger to be in the class and hoping that Buki Riley House was helping to land him and get him in the fold with Nebraska. It's probably been working the other way as well, where Pledger has been working on him, is they're very, very close. And so you've seen some of the pictures on social media of them at their time out at Norman. He's definitely been working on him to get him to be a part of that Oklahoma class.
Thoughts on Micah Parsons. Where is he at right now?
You know, right now it feels like a coin flip, to be honest, with Penn State and Oklahoma. It's hard to get a read on Micah because he doesn't do a ton of interviews, just period, with anyone. He has set a commitment date, which is December 20th, coincidentally the first day that you can sign early in this new early signing period. I would not be surprised, though, if he does end up joining up with Oklahoma as well. It feels like things are just lining up for the Sooners right now, and they're on a roll.
Greg Smith's with us, HaleVarsity.com and magazine recruiting analyst, does a great job covering Nebraska at Greg Smith HV on Twitter. Greg, your reaction here to Bill Moose's comments. I know he spoke with Mr. Vogues for an upcoming magazine feature. We had him last week, and he spoke with Baugh yesterday. And what's your take and reaction to what he did say about Frost versus what's really kind of been unsaid about Riley?
You know, what my big takeaway from that was that Nebraska fans should be completely at ease that Bill Moose will not be caught surprised by any situation while he's the athletic director involving coaches and any potential hires that he needs to make. That has to put you at ease that he is. It's not just the lip service of, yeah, you know, I have a list and I keep the list in my top desk drawer and all of that. It's not just that. You can tell that he actually has done research on at least Scott Frost. You know, if he's done the research on Scott Frost, he's done it on everyone else too, or other people that are on his list as well. It tells me that he's doing his homework and his due diligence. And I mean, I don't know how you can't deny the fact that Scott Frost is one of the top coaching candidates out there, if not the hottest name in college football right now. So I guess he gave Scott Frost a ton of praise. I was surprised at how far he went, considering he has not gone that far in support of Mike Riley. But then again, Mike Riley honestly isn't giving him a lot of reason to go that far in support of him.
I got to ask you this question, and it's a speculative answer I'm asking for, but when it comes to Buki and knowing how tight he was with Riley and Miss D, do you think he knows something?
I don't think that he necessarily knows something, but I do also feel like I'm sure he asked Mike Riley about his future, and Mike Riley told him, I honestly can't give you a solid answer that I'm going to be back. Right? Is that fair?
I think that's totally an answer Riley would give. Yeah,
and I feel like that's something that he would say, and I think that that's perfectly honest. And I think it's kind of the right thing to do because you don't want to hoodwink a kid into coming and have him be unhappy either. And if that is, in fact, the exchange that went down, it does not have to be, yeah, dude, I'm not going to be here. If it's just, I can't legitimately tell you that I will be here, that's really all that you need to know.
Okay, other commits here. for Nebraska. Josh Moore does the diary with Hale Varsity. Josh is, I mean, Bama loves him. Chase Williams, incredible. Mario Goodrich, Cam Brown. Your vibe, your feel on these kids moving forward now that Buki's gone?
You know, it's kind of an all bets are off situation because it's hard to tell which guys were really drawn into the class because of Buki and which ones had legitimate interest before he got involved and he was just kind of, you know, extra, you know, icing on top of the cake, right? You know, frosting on their, you know, topping on the sundae. It just depends on how that whole conversation went. But we do know that guys like Josh Moore are already taking visits anyway. In particular with him, his situation is kind of tricky, right? So Bama does like Josh Moore, but then again, Bama is Bama and can take anyone. I don't know that he has necessarily what we call a committable offer to Alabama right now. If he wanted to join their class, they can do that because they're Alabama. No one else can really do that. The situation with Florida State and Josh Moore, Florida State pushed his visit back that he was supposed to take this week. We reported on Hale Varsity, or Josh did actually, that he'll be back in Nebraska this weekend. That's because Florida State told him, we're not taking any official visitors this weekend, and they're going to have their own coaching turmoil out at Florida State as well. So that's going to be one that may not be as much of a slam dunk that he leaves the class as soon as possible as people may have thought a couple of weeks ago. And with those other highly rated guys, you're just going to have to continue to recruit them. That's just the reality of the situation because some of them are very highly touted and have a lot of options.
I got 30 seconds, and this is a bigger picture recruiting question. Who wins in the Florida fallout? Florida State's down. Is it Miami with Florida now with the interim coach?
Yeah, I think right for the short term, it's definitely Miami. Mark Richt has them turned around right now, and they actually have a really great recruiting class. People did not think they'd hold on to that thing. It's only getting stronger, and I think it'll get a little bit better with Florida taking a little bit of a step back as they look for their new head coach.
Greg, you're awesome, man. Great work on Buki, his story, and the commitments, and where Nebraska's at with 2018. Follow Greg Smith on Twitter at GregSmithHV, and you can read him on HaleVarsity.com and magazine with all your recruiting and Husker news. Greg, be good. We'll see you soon this weekend. Okay, bud?
Hey, absolutely, man. You have a good week.
You too. Awesome stuff. Great Smith stuff from Greg Smith there. Great stuff from Rick Heyman. 0% interest financing through 2020. That's Earthmind and Pure Grown Diamonds. 99 down, 99 a month. Get you a 1-carat diamond. Go see Rick. 12th and O downtown Lincoln, South Point Pavilion Lincoln, or out west in Grand Island. 0% interest financing through 2020. And 1-carat diamonds, 99 down, 99 a month.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hale Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Back with you, Hale Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Talk Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Dr. Brandon Seifert with us. Dr. Brandon, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, Chris. How are you guys doing?
Doing all right, and thoughts and prayers to a native Nebraskan, Zach Miller, tied in for the Bears, a terrible injury for him. We're going to spend some time on Zach Miller today, Dr. Brandon, and explain what happened with Zach Miller. And there was thought that he could lose his leg because of a severed artery. Kind of break this injury down for us.
Sure. So for those that either saw it or didn't see it, just a gruesome injury. definitely a very rare occurrence to have this kind of injury happen. It does, unfortunately, happen, you know, every once in a while. But essentially what happened with him is he, you know, coming down with a pass, landed kind of awkwardly, so it wasn't like somebody had hit him. And when he planted on the turf, instead of your knee kind of going forward as you land, his knee went straight back into what we call hyperextension and folded back in a really kind of nasty angle. So essentially a hyperextension injury, a nasty hyperextension injury, and, you know, essentially kind of dislocated the knee would probably be a good description. Actually dislocated the knee joint separate from dislocating the kneecap, which does actually occur quite frequently. A knee dislocation is a very rare event. At any rate, definitely a different injury than, say, just a typical ACL injury, PCL injury. This is can be a limb-threatening injury, which is what they were talking about in terms of he might, you know, lose his leg from this. And essentially what happens here is whenever the knee goes into that hyperextension moment, that's where the knee goes to the back, okay, what happens is there's a big artery that supplies everything essentially below the knee. That's called your popliteal artery. That sits just behind the inside part of the knee, and it's actually tethered at a couple different spots along the way behind the knee. So when the knee folds back into hyperextension, it actually puts tension on the artery. And so obviously, if you think about going into a really nasty kind of hyperextension area, the artery gets stretches, and essentially it can just tear in half, which is what most likely happened with him when you look at the video of kind of the position his knee was in when this happened. And so that becomes what we call a limb-threatening injury, where obviously you've lost blood supply, your major blood supply, to the end of your leg and your foot, and so you need to get that corrected, obviously, quickly, which it sounds like they did a great job of recognizing it and getting that taken care of. Now, in addition to the, you know, arterial part, that's obviously the most important part. Later down the road, they'll have to consider, you know, doing some kind of ligamentous work to make the knee stable with that kind of injury. You know, no doubt he tore at least his PCL and probably tore, you know, some other ligaments as well, maybe the LCL or even the ACL. They haven't come out and talked about that yet because obviously that's not important at this point until we get the vessel taken care of, which they've already done. Okay. And so that's essentially a description of what had happened there. But again, important to remember, you know, knee dislocation is very different than just a typical ligament injury of the knee.
Dr. Brandon Seifert with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center at Jock Doc Wednesday, explaining what's happened with Zach Miller and his road back. So go back to the recognition side of things as a doctor. How are you supposed to recognize in this moment of pain and shock, no doubt, for the player, that, okay, this might be limb-threatening, could be life-threatening. How do you recognize that, and how do you get that answer without doing an MRI or any further type of digital look? How do you make that call on the field to get that process of recovery started? Because that's incredible that you don't mean the collateral damage from the injury itself.
Absolutely. And that truly is the great question there. And really the big concern about these injuries, as somebody who, you know, covers a lot of sports medicine, is that's, you know, your worst nightmare scenario with somebody who has an injury like that on the field, because you ask yourself the question, well, how in the world are you going to make that diagnosis if, you know, that player goes down and everything kind of goes back into place and they're just kind of holding their extremity like, I injured this, but it doesn't look like it's dislocated out of place. The other thing that's interesting about that, too, in the digital age is that injury happens in an NFL game. Well, those folks are going to have access to right away to probably see the video. So no doubt probably their athletic trainers, their sports med doc in the sidelines probably at least got a call in from the guys up in the press box that, hey, you need to look at this video. This looks much worse than a normal knee injury. And they probably got to look at that. And that just seeing that picture or image of that right away would be, he'd be an automatic, you're going to the hospital, we're going to get, you know, vascular studies on your artery. But if you don't have that available on the sidelines, you know, things we look for is oftentimes when you have a knee dislocation event, it's still dislocated when you get out there in the field, and then that's an immediate try to get it back in place, send to the hospital right away, get a vascular study right away. In addition to that, if you go out there and it's not dislocated, you always got to make sure you check, you know, we call a vascular exam. And so in the foot, there's two kind of main arteries that you can actually feel in the foot. One is on the inside of the ankle on the back, on the inside. The other one is on kind of the top of your foot, called your dorsalis pedis. And so you want to make sure that you can feel both of those pulses. If you can't feel both of those pulses, then that's an automatic going to the hospital, going to get a vascular study for it. Mm-hmm. And so it's important anytime you suspect at least a single ligamentous injury. Obviously, if there's multiple ligaments you think are involved, you got to make sure you get a good vascular exam, and that can pick it up. So that'd be something you could do that's kind of a non-image-based on-the-field assessment. In addition to that, these things usually hurt a significant amount more than, you know, another type of, you know, ligamentous injury. So that's, you know, something that gets kind of your radar up. The other things you look for is, you know, kind of the color of the foot. And so the foot may be kind of a dusky gray color. When you squeeze the ends of the toes, there may not be a good refill of redness or blood in the end of the toes. That also can indicate a vascular issue, whether it's just a vasospasm or a true vascular injury. And so those are things that we look for on the side of the field. Fortunately, these are very rare, but on the flip side, you have to be aware of them and know that they can occur. I've seen two of these. With all the sports med coverage I've done, I've only seen two of these in an athletic competition, both of which were dislocated on the field, and it was obvious that there was going to be an issue there. We reduced it, sent them to the ER right away, and both had a vascular injury. One needed a stent, one needed a whole vascular repair like he had done, which is a devastating injury nonetheless.
Dr. Brandon, what's the timeline of recovery here for Zach Miller? Can he make it all the way back?
It's going to be really tough, you know, and in the big scheme of things, you know, once we get past the vascular part, you get that to heal, you know, looking at what else has happened here, what do the ligaments need to be, you know, reconstructed, what else inside the knee needs to be, you know, taken care of. You start tacking on multiple ligamentous injuries, and it's very difficult to get back. I think a really tough road getting back. He'll also have to have that debate with his surgeon about, is it worth the risk, you know, of going back? Because these are so rare, there's probably no papers that I'm aware of that talks about actually having a, you know, a vascular graft and returning back to playing sports, and what's the safety of that? You know, is it even recommended? Is it safe to do? Is there a chance you can, you know, re-tear the artery since it's, you know, a graft that's there? That will be a debate he'll have to have with his surgeons. But I think that, unfortunately, I think the odds getting back are extremely low in this situation.
Dr. Brandon Seifert, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, at Jock Doc Wednesday. There's the lowdown on the injury. Zach Miller, native Nebraskan and Chicago Bear tight end, suffered this past weekend. Dr. Brandon, thanks for a few minutes. We'll get caught up again.
Absolutely. Thanks, Chris. You guys take care.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
I have been an awful host when it comes to qualifying for Nebraska Northwestern tickets and Blur Party passes. We will open up the floodgates for that today and tomorrow. I'm just running out of time. Been a busy show. I'm making excuses. Forgive me. Daniel gets qualified here shortly, I promise. Big thanks to the guests today. Greg Smith was incredible on Buki and the recruiting class. Brad Edwards all over the college football playoff and his thoughts on Florida and Frost. And Dave Ennett is the play-by-play man for Northwestern. A good preview of the Cats. Shuey was awesome on recruiting. And Tiger Woods, so a loaded Wednesday. If you missed it, it's all good. You can catch us on the podcast, HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or iTunes. Take us with. Pretty easy to download. Danny will get that show posted in a moment. 80 years and counting. We've been doing things the AgriGold way over the decades together. We've built a brand that's truly different because of our knowledge, different because of our passion, different because we represent the voice of our customer. Our true partners, providing customers with the very best seed, always backed by a handshake and a promise of more diversity, less risk, greater yield. For more information, visit agrigold.com. Okay, so Danny, we need to solve this problem. Usually it's caller 9 and 10. You want to do caller 9 and 10, 11 and 12?
Yeah, it sounds good to me.
Okay, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Let's do it.
In reference to Leroy Etienne, we should do 8-9-10. That's how I used to call him. It's not Leroy Etienne, it's 8-9-10. It's an all Big Eight linebacker way before you were born, my son. So, callers 9 through 12, huh? Sound okay?
Yep, sounds good to
all
me.
Right. Danny will take callers 9 through 12. To qualify for Nebraska Northwestern tickets and those Blur Party passes, 24 hours from now, Colton, the 80s action hero, will for sure draw a winner for those Northwestern Nebraska tickets and Blur Party passes. So callers, 9, 10, 11, 12. 1-800-825-5865 or 466-3776. 466-3776. 800-825-5865. Callers 9, 10, 11, and 12 qualify for Nebraska Northwestern tickets. Tomorrow on the show, Gary Barnett, former head coach of Northwestern, his take on this Saturday's matchup. We will have a Searles sighting. Jeremiah Searles, Minnesota Viking, will be with us. And we'll get caught up with the Bleacher Report's Lars Anderson, get his take on how murky things are in the SEC, get his take on Mike Riley and Nebraska. Lars, a native Nebraskan, so we are loaded up. We are searching for Uncle Jerry as well. He may join us on tomorrow's episode. Caller 9, caller 10, caller 11, caller 12. Chance at Northwestern Nebraska tickets and Blur Party passes. Qualify now. Drawing in 24 hours. Good stuff today on Buki, on Bill Moose. And we thank you for tuning in and spending time with us here on Hail Varsity. For Danny Burke, Chris Schmidt, talk to you tomorrow at 4 with Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.